This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with my colleague and friend Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. We're going to Tokyo to Lance Gatling, a principal at Nexial Research. Lance, the results are in. The Trump presidency has returned. That means talk of tariffs is routine. I understand Mr. Lighthizer will return as trade representative. Mr. Navarro will be back in the administration. So far, the appointments are all looking like what are described by London as China hawks. I mention all this because since we last spoke at length about Japan's politics, the LDP was first weakened and then revived itself, I believe, by endorsing Ishiba as prime minister after they endorsed Ishiba by prime minister beforehand. I lost track of all these machinations. Is the LDP now returned to authority as it has been for most of the last 70 or 80 years, or is there reason to believe that Mr. Ishiba is weakened in some fashion by this excitement? Good day to you, Lance.
Well, hello, John. Hello, Gordon. Well, I can safely say almost anything because we're in uncharted territory here. The election of a prime minister in Japan from the minority, forming a minority government like this, has only happened twice in Japan's modern history, post-war, with the post-war constitution. I've been here for both. It's fascinating to watch. What happened was the lower house voted, and no one got a majority. So the upper house voted safely for Ishiba because it's controlled by the Liberal Democratic Party, Ishiba's party. And then it goes back to the lower house for a runoff between the top two vote getters. Well, the problem was that of the 400 and let's call it 65 votes available in the lower house, 84 votes were cast for either nobody or their favorite sons, the heads of the minor party. So almost 20% of the votes were invalid. So Ishiba actually won with a mere 221 votes, 58% of the valid votes, but only 48% of the total votes. So we're kind of in uncharted territories, but that was enough to put him into the prime ministership. And it's an interesting little ceremony. And without fanfare, they read off the numbers. And Ishiba, who's one of the back rows of the parliament where he had been seen earlier catching a nap, got up, bowed in three directions, and left. The chamber emptied within seconds. And then he had to establish that afternoon his second cabinet. Now, the first Ishiba cabinet lasted all of 41 days. So this is not a sign of strength. They are, in fact, weakened. In the 20 cabinet members, he had to replace two of the members who actually lost their own seats. And then a third seat was given to their minority coalition partner, the Komeito, one of them. But Ishiba is very heavily into national security and defense issues with four key members, the prime minister, the foreign minister, the defense minister, two-time defense minister Gen Nakatani, and also the chief cabinet secretary, all have having years and years of experience with national security affairs. But the opposition, which can at any time call for a vote of no confidence, and that's going to be Ishiba's challenge, is keeping those minor parties happy with their emphasis more on developing the economy and helping demographics and working to revitalize the countryside here, which is being rapidly depopulated in favor of the major cities. So he has a pretty tight rope to cross a lot of obstacles here. So it's going to be a fascinating time.
Gordon, you have a question for Lance.
Lance, you said something fascinating about the rural areas being depopulated. In a country where the population is shrinking, are there any solutions at all to the phenomena of people moving to the cities?
Well, that's one of the issues that certainly the LDP and the other political parties have been faced with. There are people who actually welcome Japan depopulating to a certain degree, having less population pressures. But the countryside is awash in small towns where the average age is north of 55, 65 years old, sometimes even older, as young people head for regional cities or even into Tokyo, which is still building out, still building up. It's a strange phenomenon where you have very fine, beautiful infrastructure out in the country, and the countryside itself is beautiful. So not with much fanfare, there are, in fact, a lot of Southeast Asians who have gotten permits to work out in the country, and they settle down and they get married and they're becoming part of the communities. And there's some minor changes in terms of total numbers. And the new numbers have just been released of the numbers of foreigners living in Japan. It only is about 65,000 Americans, but there are almost 900,000 Chinese, 600,000 Vietnamese and own. So you see that there is an Asian component to the solution, whether it's someone who wants to help on a farm or agricultural cooperative or work in a factory out in a small town. But yes, it's a fascinating issue. I wish they could fix it, because as a former farmer myself, growing on a farm family, it is lovely country with some great heritage in their own farm communities and culture.
National security. The previous government was keen on supporting Taiwan and talking with Seoul and certainly meeting with the United States. Ishiba came into office following much the same course. Has this changed into a minority government dimmed in any fashion the expectation that Japan will put its shoulder to the wheel against the PRC?
Well, bear in mind that the second Ishiba government is probably about 30 years old, right? 30 hours old right now. And there's not been a whole lot of time to make any major policy statements. Certainly, he's negotiating with folks. They have to get the supplemental budget confirmed. That's a very big step. I think he's going to be very reluctant to repeat some of the more expansive national security policy trial balloons that he has lofted. But in fact, he did talk to Donald Trump, and they want to continue their discussions about closer relationships. The mention of tariffs is going to be a big problem for Japan, as it is closely intertwined with the Chinese economy. Much of what Americans buy marked Japanese, Sony, or whatever is actually assembled, perhaps designed or marketed from Japan, but assembled in China. And the economies are highly intertwined. So this gives Japan a unique position to help Japan and the rest of Asia deal with China. But if the tariffs were applied willy-nilly, I think the Japanese economy would be in danger, if not outright damaged. And that's going to be part of the amelioration of Trump's going in position to place tariffs on everything coming into the U.S.
We have about a minute, Gordon.
So, Lance, what is Tokyo's policy on China going to be? Is it going to be hardline, or will it be softened?
I think we'll have to wait probably a few months to really determine. I think the Chinese are also going to wait to see what happens when the Trump administration stands up on January the 20th. Certainly, there are going to be some pronouncements before then, and we'll see how the Chinese respond. As I mentioned, I think the last time we spoke, if it's a top-level criticism or more perfunctory from a lower-level bureaucrat. But we're all in wait-and-see mode, and the next 3 or 4 months are going to be very interesting.
Lance Gatling is a principal at Nexial Research. He's based in Tokyo. Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.